7. Just remember that you can. There was a day when Jun woke before dawn. The suit, sensing the change in her breath and movement, turned on illuminated panels in the faceplate showing temperature, weather predictions, wind speed, miles walked yesterday. She muttered the command words that turned the visor clear again. She looked out through her own reflection at the dark jungle. The moon was so bright that it cast crisp shadows of the canopy overhead onto the jungle floor. The watery smear of the Milky Way was clearly visible. If she were to turn her headlamps on, she'd see 1,000 glittering eyes of insects. But she didn't turn them on. In the distance, she heard the whoops and crashes of monkeys. Sometimes when she slept fastened to a branch, those monkeys ran straight over her, taking her prone form for another outgrowth of the jungle. In a way, she was. She had just taken the very long way around. She'd never thought she'd feel safe in this jungle. But the jungle was noble. It was trustworthy, in a way that Lenk, Ellen, and Zimri never were. There had been a great storm, but the storm had passed. In the 3 years since Lenk walked away from her, she had learned the affordances of her empire. She had come to recognize the birds that migrate in their season and the fish that rise to shore in their time. She'd noticed that, year by year, there were more birds and more fish. The suit confirmed that she was right. The air was cleaner, less plastic and metal debris washing up on the beach. So something had gone well. The suit had guided her to stick to the south and east of the island. "So I can avoid the others?" Jun had asked. "This part of the island is best," it had said. "The fishing is best here. There are good places to hunt and to sleep." Sometimes on the horizon, she noted something that might have been the dark smoke of a hastily concealed cook fire before the fume converter on the stoat box stove kicked in. Once, on a very still day, she thought she heard the sound of a musical instrument, something with plucked strings from a distant shore. But that would be at least 25 miles away. It seemed unlikely. Still, she took inspiration and asked the suit to help her construct a kind of guitar from carefully sawed and planed wood, strings made from the intestine of one of the largest animals on the island, a kind of antelope. The whole project, from hunting the antelope to constructing a kiln to dry the wood to varnishing the final instrument, took the best part of a year. She had come to know these 100 or so square miles well, and yet there was still so much to learn. She had a summer home and a winter home, a spring hunting ground and an autumn foraging place. From her vantage point, she could span with her eyes the forests and the rivers, the reddened cliffs and the speckled shore, a place she had made hers by knowing it and caring for it. There was time for everything, but there was always more that could be done. It came to her that she could live here for the rest of her natural life if she had to, eating roots and tubers and small roasted mammals. She could learn and practice new physical skills. She could become a climber, a spearfisher. She could study languages and crafting skills. The suit had courses for every conceivable self-improvement project. She could delve into astronomy, zoology, botany, and earth sciences. Might even make some discoveries here in this biodiverse wild. The suit had all the music, art, literature, performance she could ever want. It had downloaded tens of millions of pages from key internet sites, Wikipedia, various how-to sites, history and debate, even gossip and argument, all the nonsense of her previous life. Jun had read, by this time, all of Name the Day. She'd found One Corn's posts. It hadn't been a hard code to crack who One Corn was, and she understood why those posts were there. She discussed the ideas of Fox and Rabbit with the suit several times. She'd even instructed it to hive off a separate part of its artificial conversation program to debate these ideas with her. This morning, she thought it through all over again. The point of civilization, the idea of cities, the reason for agriculture, all of this. Was there a point in knowing that we used to be Fox, given that now, apart from some small isolated groups, the Taiga dwellers, the North Sentinel Islanders, some people in Nunatsiavut, everyone was rabbit? Was looking back just always a bad idea, like it was for Ito and Orpheus? What was the point of berating ourselves for not being hunter-gatherers anymore? For liking symbolic behaviors like music and drawing and movies and games? In the stillness of the early dawn, Shun lifted the visor. There were no more bright green names tracking the caterpillars and the ants and the budding flowers and the slime mold. The world was there, as it is. And in that moment, there was no need for words. There were no more names for anything. She was there as you are there. Wherever you are, the richness and complexity and inexhaustible, unplumbable there-ness of the whole rushes in through your eyes and your ears and your nose and across your skin. Every single thing around you is right there. And so are you. The teeming world is right there, and all of it is neither good nor bad. It just is. It is not possible to express this with symbols. All that the symbols can ever be is a flag in the sand pointing at where to dig. You have found the treasure. It is the world as it is. Every part of the world pressed in on Shun, as present and as sure as the future had once seemed to her. The sight of crawling things and flying creatures, the sweet scents and the sour ones, the faint taste of cherries on her tongue, the atonal harmonies of the jungle screeches and howls, the intense and beautiful sensation of the suit's interior softness on her skin. Too strong and too real and too present for words. All the words went away. But the sense that Shun had in that moment of the whole world around her without names cannot be named. When you try to give it a word, when she thought flag and sand, she fell out of the world and back into symbols. There is no other way. The great evolutionary advantage of human beings is this brain that divides and sorts and names the world. You should not expect to escape it very often. Just remember that you can. Lai Chun had once made a video about surviving for years in the deep woods, and 8.2 million people had watched it. She had said, "Prepare yourself for uncomfortable living. Make sure you have a good tent. Trap and hunt with a crossbow. People are going to get desperate. Try to appreciate the natural world around you." But the Lai Chun who had done those things was gone now. She turned a series of visor settings off one by one. She didn't need to see the names of the creatures and plants anymore. She knew which stems were good to eat and which were bitter, which low leaves signaled a sweet tuber beneath the earth, which grubs would cook well over a fire to a nutty crunch. She knew the birds and the insects, the soft and the hard rocks, the trees whose wood was good to burn and the trees whose wood was good to build. She'd practiced how to hunt and set traps and build a smokery, how to take the lives of a few slower, older animals, in the way that a fox keeps the rabbits fast and clever. She had made fragrant beeswax candles and chalked fired earthenware pots. She knew which muds would bake to a hard but brittle pottery and which would be thick but sturdy. She remembered as another person, the girl who had feared that the mud would swallow her whole. The suit had taught her as a parent might have taught a child long ago, not to be here as an emergency in case of a disaster, not as a place to retreat to out of fear, but as her home. The world as her home, in the way our ancestors were at home in the world once long ago. It had only taken a global apocalypse, an array of technology, and 3 years of her life. That night, she stood on the promontory and watched the sunset across the jungle. Red and gold mackerel clouds over the tree canopy, then dim embers in the sky, and then utter dark. The wordless world was always there now. she had only to dip into it and quench her thirst. There was no future now. Time did not point as an arrow. It was a spiral, around the seasons again and again, until one day her bones would sink into the earth and her flesh would go to start some other life again. Well, good.